Hi, love. I'm Nicole Weston, and you are listening to Redefining Motherhood More Than Moms. In this community, we focus on creating a safe and sacred space for us to cultivate loving, gentle, and compassionate relationships with ourselves first, so that we can be present in our relationships with our partner and children and be the best mom we can be. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Redefining Motherhood. Today, I am sitting down with the amazing Daniela Chase. I am so excited to have these conversations today. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being here, Daniela.
Thank you for having me, Nicole. It's a delight to be here.
It's so exciting, and we have so much to talk about. So let's first start with share your story of why redefining motherhood. What does that mean for you?
Ooh, redefining motherhood is kind of... Well, it is how I rolled from the get-go, primarily because I was raised in an environment where neither of my natural parents were present.
Okay.
And so my legal guardian was my maternal grandmother, and my biological aunt served as a foster mom, and she was amazing. But the awareness that my biological mother was not present and that the relationships I had with these two very strong female role models in my life, who were my primary caregivers, the awareness that neither one of them was my mom led to constant questioning, you know, what would it be like? And not that it was running in the forefront of my mind, but in the background always, how would life be different if my mom were here? How would life be different if I had been allowed to remain with my mom and had been raised in that environment? And whether it looked different in a positive or a negative way, regardless, it was... it became a key factor when I became a mother in terms of trying to figure out how to be a mom as the natural mom of these children. Because it was a question that I didn't really have firsthand experience with. I had my grandmother and my mom, who was my biological aunt, and I had any number of positive role models who were the moms of friends who had been amazing in my life. And there was still the question mark, what does the perfect mom look like?
Interesting. And so what did you come up with?
Oh, I wasn't even aware of it, but several years into motherhood, I realized that I had been trying to live up to this image I had of June Cleaver as the ideal mom.
Nice.
And recognizing how completely impossible it was to model my motherhood after someone who didn't actually exist for more than 30 minutes at a time on a tiny TV screen.
Yeah, right. Right. But, you know, that's what you saw.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So you say, you know, what you saw, what motherhood should be versus what it was, and then versus what it could always be, like the question of wondering, right? That curiosity. Can you share with us how that played out with you? I mean, we've had some off-screen kind of conversations and they were incredible, but I'm curious, like where did that then lead you? How did that play out in your journey as a mom?
Well, it's interesting because I was a strong believer in stay-at-home parenting, and the reasons for that I discovered much later had more to do with feelings I had around having been unsafe in some regards as a child and needing to provide that level of safety for my children. So it wasn't about moms not working. It was about a parent being a primary caregiver, and it was very tied to some stories that I was running that I needed to heal.
Right.
And the decision to be a stay-at-home mom was made not around gender. It was made around looking at our economic situation, and was it my partner or myself? Was it the kid's dad or me who had the greater long-term earning potential? And at that point in our careers, it was definitely him. So I was the one who chose to stay at home, and he continued building a career. So even though the decision wasn't made around gender, it in very subtle ways began to mirror some very traditional gender roles.
Right.
And I think at the time, I wasn't aware, but hindsight, I can see very, very clearly how that then impacted on what was being modeled for our children and what they were learning about gender roles and self-concept and all of the different ways that parents show children how to do life.
Right.
Right. And how to become.
Ooh, how to become. That word, and I've already wrote it. I already wrote it down in when I take like my little intuitive notes, and I wrote that word already down for one of the things you had said, and then you just said it again. And for me, my journey, like, you know, one of those like fall to my knees kind of moments was, you know, being led through a session, and it was like it's about who you are becoming, and it was like the whole world stopped and all I could hear was who you are becoming. And it was like this word that for me just means so much freedom and permission, and could go on and on and on about it. But I've heard it so often in your story now. And so I would love to hear when you say who, you know, the becoming, like, how does that play out in your world? What does that mean for you?
Well, long before NLP, I was very aware that my job as a mom, as a parent, had nothing to do with creating a container or it had nothing to do with telling my children who to be. It had everything to do with my job was to provide opportunities, to provide experiences while also holding safe and sacred space. So keeping them safe, yes, but providing them with experiences and exposures that would allow them to have those aha moments. Oh my gosh, this makes my heart sing. This makes my soul come alive. I never believed that it was my job to tell my children what to do or how to, well, how to do it, I'm sure, loading the dishwasher now.
Yeah, those are some logistical things. Yeah,
I'm still human and I have lots of opinions for sure. but I recognized that it was my job to facilitate my children's growth journey as opposed to creating it for them.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that. Facilitate my children's journey. So I'm just going to back up a little bit for our listeners who aren't maybe tuning in the first time and they're not sure what NLP is all about. One or two sentences. What does NLP, because you said long before NLP, you know, I can share what NLP means for me, but in one or two sentences, what does NLP mean for you in your life now?
For me in my life now, NLP is the collection of tools and techniques that I tap into that allow me to evaluate the stories I'm running in my own mind, that the stories that are the perceptions I'm buying into, the reality that I'm choosing to experience and create for myself. And using the tools and techniques of NLP, I can very quickly see where I am, in fact, limiting myself.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So in allowing myself, like, I mean, I have my moments where I'm definitely way in my stuff.
Yeah.
But I also know that I have these tools. And as soon as I tap into or access and resource my toolbox or resource other people in the community, if I'm not able to do it on my own, I can unpack the stories and applying the tools very quickly here where I'm allowing myself to be limited by a very, very tiny perception or a skewed perception or a completely distorted perception.
Ooh.
And by telling myself a new story, what do I want to be true? And how do I create that? That's what the NLP is for me. It's the freedom to create life, to be experienced by me in whatever way I choose, so that I can walk through life in a very empowered way.
Yeah. And leave
victimhood behind.
Yes. No, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm seeing so many connections in terms of, you know, I discovered NLP before becoming a mother. Sometimes I wonder if I discovered NLP because that's what I wanted in my life. Like, I definitely went through a journey of not knowing if I ever wanted to have children, and then, you know, falling in love with myself and healing so many parts of myself and truly accepting myself for who I was. I was like, oh, like, I can see how this could happen. And then, yeah, creating NLP. So I know, I don't know motherhood without it. And I'm sure that's a whole other conversation that I will have. But I love how you have, there's so many synchronicities between the way, like who we are. And then it's almost like you found NLP and you found these tools, and it was like just another opportunity to expand this awareness. And so that leads me into having a conversation. You're talking a lot about gender, and you're talking a lot about the model that, you know, you and your, you know, partner at the time, what you guys had, you know, set up for. So how did that play out? Tell us about that story.
I'm not sure I'm understanding the question.
Yeah. So you said, you know, you had decided to stay home because of the belief you wanted to be safe and secure, facilitate opportunities for your children to become who they wanted to become. And you talk about gender, and I will say that, you know, there's the gender expectations, the blue, they, you know, a lot of my girlfriends and I will talk about the blue and the pink roles and what's expected. And you had a conversation with your partner at the time and said, like, what is the trajectory of growth in a career? Regardless of the time, here's what I'm realizing. Yes, as a society, we evolve, families evolve. But this conversation about gender and income, if I do say, it seems like it's something that has always been a thing. Like, yes, that conversation hasn't really changed. I don't know if you would agree.
I do agree. I think that our culturally and in our society, we're still imbalanced in terms of a very strong belief system that still exists, that is changing, I think, with younger generations and younger parents like yourself. And yay,
yes,
it's changing.
Yes.
So it's changing with the younger parents, but in my day, it was still very much the overarching belief that the primary caregivers for very young children were moms. And because that belief system was very much woven into our societal structures, it was still very common for, you know, employers to have this belief that if a man was a family man, he needed to be earning more. And if a woman became a mother, then the thoughts that ran in the workforce were that hiring women of a certain age, particularly if they were married, we should expect mat leave sometime over the next 5 years, and therefore they are the less desirable candidate because we can't be sure they're going to be here, right? And all of that impacted on career trajectory. Pardon me. It impacted on salary expectations and so on and so forth. That is changing. We have come a long way. We still have work to do.
We still have work to do. Yes, 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 yes.
Yes. And at the same time, what I'm seeing amongst younger parents and that I'm absolutely loving is a far greater involvement and expectation of involvement by dads.
Yes.
And families are learning how to craft an income, a revenue for the family that allows both mom and dad to, you know, realize their dreams and do their careers and create what it is that they want to create while simultaneously being very invested in their families and in their primary relationship with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Younger parents are showing, I think for the first time, really showing us how it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that to be so incredibly inspiring, that to whatever extent I can share from having learned from doing it differently in a way that didn't necessarily serve all of the things I aspired to, because I had the same dreams and visions.
Right.
And was wanting to realize them within a structure that I believed didn't have the flexibility. And knowing what I know now about creating my own reality, I see how my own beliefs actually limited much of what I was capable of.
Whoa. Right. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want to dive into that with us? You want to share a little bit? Like, cause when I hear you say that, I think if it were to help one listener and think, whoa, like, is there something here that, cause the reality is the structures, the expectations of parents in the workplace now more than ever, when we are experiencing such a different time in our society, right? We're working from home. Both parents are working from home because of where we're at in the world. The expectations of all of this are shifting. And so I have so many thoughts on it. So, okay, let's put that over here and let's dive into, if you could dive into the beliefs that you feel, yeah, like take us on that journey. I'm so curious about that.
I carried and still do. I mean, I still do battle with those I can'ts.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that I'm grappling with right now. And I recognize that it is my own limiting belief that is creating the I can't. So I'm asking myself, what else is possible? If I were to, for a moment, suspend my own disbelief, what could be possible?
Mm.
And I think when I was younger, much of what I believed was possible was built on a foundation of, if I'm not there to look after my children won't be safe.
Right.
And I think when we come into our parenting years, we recognize immediately how vulnerable our newborns are. Mm-hmm. And even before they're actually born into the world, while we're still carrying them as moms, we recognize how vulnerable that life is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a time where if we have any unresolved stuff around feeling unsafe in our childhood, that is going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And it may show up very much in our face, and it may show up in very subtle ways, but to whatever degree we have unresolved, unhealed issues around safety in our childhood, it'll definitely show up, and we'll play that out in how we raise our kids.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really, really valuable to have access to a level of awareness when that stage of your life comes along. I cannot tell you how much I wish I had had the tools
mm-hmm.
At that stage of my life when my children first arrived. I think it would have been a very different way of parenting. I think many of the beliefs that I carried would have remained consistent, but how I was able to deliver on those aspirations would have changed tremendously
mm-hmm.
in a very favorable way, a beneficial way, I think, for my kids especially.
Yeah. And I've had conversations with a few other women too, who say, if I had the tools back when I was in those, mm-hmm. Very young baby stages, I think that would have been even more overwhelming. So I've kind of heard a few different sides. Something that stays though, is that our values really do, the value of primary caregiver and safety and security and creating a space for children to become who they are. Those are your values. Like, those are a big deal. And I think, like, for, you know, let's just go right back to redefining motherhood. I mean, you decided that, and this is what I love about motherhood, right? It evolves based on who, you know, the generations. And it's like, I am, I'll speak for myself, I am who I am because of my mother, because she decided to do it differently from her mother, and she did it, and so forth. And I find so much empowering values within that. And I love it. Like, there's only one reason I am who I am, because my mom decided to do things differently, right? And her values are the same. And I'm very sure that my values are very similar in that sense. And I have to think that even though you didn't have the NLP back then, your values then and today are absolutely the same.
My values were very definitely shaped by the way in which I was parented. And in some ways, my values in how I chose to parent aligned very much with how I was parented. And in other ways, they were the complete antithesis.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yes, absolutely.
With, I will say, the same motivations. Like, my mom, my foster mom, who, as far as I'm concerned, was my mom. I mean, right?
Yeah.
My mom was a very loving woman who had experienced horrific child abuse, mm-hmm. and made the determination that she was not going to physically beat her children. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when my mom got really angry, she had a different way of expressing that anger that was abusive. I mean, I'm not going to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was also a very loving and caring parent who had, you know, her own share of experiences that did not serve her, that harmed her, that she wanted to protect us from. Mm-hmm. So her way of protecting us was to be a very controlling parent. It was, hey, mom, can I? Well, heck no, absolutely not. And I was the kind of kid who would say, well, why not?
The curiosity. It's all like, it's there.
I wanted to know why. And if you could present me with a plausible argument, then I was very compliant. And my mom didn't operate that way. My mom was, because I said so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when my children came along, I had already made the determination that those kinds of conversations would not end with, because I said so. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was given a question, it was always a dialogue.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I would say 99.8% of the time it was a dialogue. If there was physical danger, because I said so, because it was quick, it was efficient.
Yeah. Because you're a human. You're a human, right? Yeah.
Around permission and access to experiences, the conversations were always age appropriate, and they weren't exhausted until my child ran out of questions.
Hmm. Okay, I'm going to have a question for you before you go further. You and I had a conversation before, you know, jumping online. And I think this is where it fits is, you made a decision to say, you have a conversation with your children that, like, okay, at some point in your life, we're probably not going to get along, right? Can you tell me? Because I thought that was really, because here it is, it's because of what you experienced as, mm-hmm. as a woman and as, you know, growing up. And then you were like, okay, this is how it's going to be different in my world. And then why that is so magnificent and powerful and empowering in your family.
So as I started off saying, I kind of had three moms. I had my birth mother, I had mm-hmm. my mom, and then my grandmother, who was my legal guardian and a very maternal figure in my life. And so I had all of these different experiences of what motherhood can look like. Mm-hmm. And wove them together for better or for worse in my own experience. But one thing that I was absolutely clear on, because of the complexity of the different relationships, was that it was possible to really be angry with my mother, mm-hmm. and to, you know, like, I hate my mother's guts. Mm-hmm. Love my mother, mm-hmm. but I hate my mother's guts. Mm-hmm. And I knew that just from watching my friends and their relationships with their parents, that it was not unusual. And then listening to friends with older children, you know, share their stories and their woes, that when my kids hit their tweens and teens, I knew that it was quite likely that at some point we were going to run into a period of time where, you know, they may still love me, but they hate my guts.
Yeah.
So, I literally sat each of them down at some point and I said, so, hey, you know, there's a very good chance that at some point you're not going to like me very much, you know, and we may not get along as well as we have always gotten along. And I want you to know now that that's okay. Mm. I want you to know now that when you get to that place where you don't want to have anything to do with me, you don't want to talk to me, or you want to come and confront me about something, mm-hmm. and you want to say, hey, this was totally not cool, mm-hmm. and here's how it affected me, and that hurt me, mm-hmm. that I will be able to sit down and hold space for you and have that conversation. Yeah. And it, as hard as it may be to hear,
yeah,
I am prepared to hear it, because I know that when my sisters and I sat down with our mom and said, oh my gosh, you're crying.
Yeah, because I just think how empowering and safe is it to have that insight to say, like, it's going to happen and I'm preparing. And I just think of like how crazy things can get. And it's like, I just think about Hannah, like if she she's 21 months old, let's keep this in mind. When she disagrees with something that we're saying, you can see the determination, the ambition, and she believes in it. And it's like, I'm going to say no right now. Mm-hmm. And I love you, right? Like I can say no and I love you. And so we've gotten into a habit of like saying, like, let me know when you need a hug. Right? Because she gets to experience her emotions and she gets to be upset that she didn't get what she wanted. And I get to still be there. And so there's something really incredible that happens when I say, just let me know when you need a hug. Most of the time, it's instantly. Mm-hmm. But there have been a few times where she hasn't been ready for it. And then I still say, like, let me know when you need a hug. And she's still crying and she's got her arms there and she comes right over to me and she gives me a hug. And like, that's her face. Right? And so for me, it's like, that's the holding space, right? For me, that is such an important value. And it is a tricky, tricky concept, I think, right? Yeah. And I think to go into motherhood with that intention and to set the stage for that. And then for fast forward, because I think you said fast forward, like they got into their 20s or something and, or, you know, and there's a lot of different lenses. It's the lens of the child, the lens of an adult. And then there's the lens of you as a mother. Mm-hmm. A lot of spaces to hold there.
Well, I think the universal experience is that we love our children to distraction. We would lay down our lives for them. And as much as we love them and want to do our very best for them in our humanity, there will be times where our very, very best is woefully short of what they need. Mm-hmm. And being able to embrace that truth, mm-hmm. and, you know, say, okay, I'm a mom. I love my kids more than anything. And I'm still going to get it wrong, even with all of the best of intentions. And I can choose to forgive myself and still take responsibility, knowing that at some point my child may reach a point where they need to process that experience, whatever it was, mm-hmm. that interaction, and come back to you and say, here is how this affected me. Mm-hmm. And whether that becomes a conversation or just the ability to be that rock for them, mm-hmm. so that they can just express how they felt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because there's something incredibly freeing in being able to model the humanity of getting it wrong, mm. and being able to hold oneself accountable in a way that is forgiving and accepting. And how do I do better?
Yeah.
How can I do it differently so that when this pattern shows up again, because we know they do, mm-hmm. how can I show up differently so that the next engagement that is built on this kind of experience better serves both me and my child?
Yeah. It's like we could do a whole other conversation on that.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's a big one. There's so many different pieces and elements into that, and the vulnerability of doing that, because, you know, again, like you said, the beliefs that we can have going into being parents, and those beliefs create our values. And you know, the safety and security, I always think too, like, how can I create a safe and secure space mentally and emotionally, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're just figuring it out. I said to Hannah actually this morning, and I'd never heard myself say this before, but it's like, mommy's just learning your internal clock. And yeah. I was like, actually, I've been learning your internal clock since the day you were born. Just, it keeps coming in different waves, right? Because it's like, it's time to put on your boots. And she's like checking out her cool tutu in the mirror. And it's like, just, you know, deep breathing, because it's all good. But, you know, again, I was like, the pressure of like, this isn't me. It's not about me. It's about, you know, who is she, and accepting her for who she is and who she is becoming. And like, for me, that lesson or that learning or that release of an old belief that was preventing me from moving forward, Hannah was definitely 8 months old at that point. And it was like, okay, so if I'm going to give myself permission to become who I'm becoming, that means that I get to give myself the grace daily. And she yes. gets to as well. You know, it's a hippy trippy conversation. I'm super dizzy now, but
I think motherhood is an incredible experience. And I would imagine that as we as a society give men permission to really lean into parenting as well, it will be the same for fatherhood. And for men who are already like 1,000% engaged on every level with their kids, I think it's the same.
Yep.
But there's like, I learned how to understand my mother's experience and my mother's perspective of on raising me as I raised my own children.
Yeah.
So the depth yes. of my relationship with my mom increased yes. as I grew in my own motherhood.
Yes. Yes. Right? Oh yeah. I think there was one day I just called. Or no, I left a voice note because I was like, I need to work. I'm just getting a bunch of stuff. And I'm, you know, and then I just left a bunch of voice notes, like bawling with just so much appreciation and gratitude. And my mom texts and she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, no, I just think this is really overdue. And just like, thank you so much. And so where there's lightness, there is darkness. And I've also experienced the other side of it too, which I think if we're human, that is definitely an experience too. And I think what you had said, you know, forgiveness, that forgiveness mm-hmm. practice is probably where we've got to lean into that as well, on the dark side, right?
Yeah. And if I'm going to be able to forgive myself for getting it wrong, that presupposes that I'm also willing to forgive my mom for getting it wrong. Yeah. And it presupposes that I'm willing to forgive my child for looking at me and saying, man, did you ever get it wrong? And I'm so ticked at you,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Because that ability, and this is just what I'm learning on my journey, the deeper I dive into becoming, is really that the more grace I can give to others, the more grace I can give to myself, and the more grace I can give to myself, the more grace I have to give to others. And it's like that infinity loop.
For sure. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The two are interdependent. And I used to believe that I couldn't give grace to someone else if I couldn't give it to myself, or I couldn't love someone else fully if I couldn't love myself. I also had went through a period of time where I believed that it was necessary to love others in order to love myself.
Hmm.
And where I'm at now is that the two are interdependent. I can't separate them. If I am not giving myself grace, I'm not giving others grace. If I'm not yeah. giving others grace, I'm not giving myself grace.
Right. A flow. It's that.
Yeah.
It's that flow.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. One of, the giving and the receiving, it is a flow, and that concept of, being able to really tap into that flow and honor it, right? And honor and accept it for what it is. So with all of this experiences, you are doing some incredible work on the front lines, we'll say, of, gender. And so, we're going to have you back on and we're going to talk a lot more. But for right now, can you tell us, what you are doing in the world of gender and why that is so important for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I raised 2 children, mm-hmm. One pronounced male at birth, one pronounced female. Mm-hmm. And in spite of the fact that I wasn't huge into gendering, I was not in the pink and blue camp from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I was not going to raise a daughter who, lived on Barbie, and I was not going to raise a son who only knew bang, bang, shoot 'em ups. Mm-hmm. So Barbies and guns were like not in the household until my younger sister decided to bequeath all of her Barbie collection left over from childhood to my daughter, which is another conversation. But my awareness of gender was still very much within the binary, in that the 2 available options were you were either male or you were female.
Right.
And I had no knowledge of the non-binary, that the gender binary is actually a social construct and a myth that is relatively modern, mm-hmm. until 6 years ago, when my oldest sat with me in the car in just outside of a coffee shop in Hamilton and said, "Mom, there's something I need to tell you." Mm-hmm. And because I could immediately sense how serious it was, I turned in the seat and looked at the time, her.
Her, yes.
And said, "Sure, honey, what is it? What's going on?" And what tumbled out of their mouth was, "Mom, I'm genderqueer." And my reaction was, "Okay, I love you. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah.
And how do I support you?
Yeah.
How do we, because obviously this is a huge awareness that you've arrived at. That, you've taken an enormous risk in disclosing this to me and trusting me with this information, because it's still so new socially that a lot of people don't know how to respond to it. And some parents sadly respond, some parents really have an ab react. So, it's been a 6-year journey of learning what that means, learning a lot about what gender actually is and how it's defined and how we become aware of it and how we give expression to our sense of gender, and recognizing that it's a very distinct piece of ourselves among many pieces of how we experience life.
Yes.
And really building my business now around sharing those awareness pieces that I've been gifted with, so that other parents of gender non-conforming children, whether they're very young children or whether they're adult children, have the ability to learn the language.
Yes.
And understand the concepts without turning to their child and saying, "Okay, it's your job to educate me because I don't know what you're talking about."
All right.
The reality for a lot of gender nonconforming folk is that because it's still so widely an unknown, they run into a lot of just showing up as being so distinctly different and finding space in the world in that way that is welcoming and safe can be really, really challenging. So often the emotional capacity to hold space and say, "Sure, I'll teach you all about my lived experience," it's just restricted. I mean, we all, like the cup is empty at the end of the day, and I don't have anything left for you to do that. So I see my role as a mom who's been through that coming out experience and who continues to learn as my adult child continues to develop their sense of self and become. I have a platform to share information that takes the intense pressure off of the children who are living this experience and allows me to demonstrate allyship to both gender nonconforming people and their families.
Cool.
And build a bridge.
So I was just going to say you're bridging the gap between the two. Yeah, because you know what comes up for me is like when I was born and raised and there was no point in my life where I had to have a conversation to say I am a female and I go by she, her. Like that was never expected of me. That was never a conversation. And if I were to, and it is definitely a discovery conversation, but it's like I am so much more than this identified label of she and her and identifying not a female, but identifying as me as a woman and what that makes me. But I never had to sit down and have that conversation. So it's like, how could I set that up for my children? I have one right now to have that, you know, because it's like, it's not expected of anyone unless we have to say that we're different than whatever is expected to be normal, air quotes, right? So it is an incredible platform and space for you to bring awareness in and to help families and work through that because, yeah, I like the word ally. Like for a child, for a teen, for an adult to be able to share their experience with an ally, like it just feels very empowering. And becoming, right? And becoming.
And it's particularly interesting to consider that as much as I love my children, as much as I got many of the parenting pieces right, and, you know, any number of them not right, I still managed to raise a child who in their adult years came to me and said, you know, Mom, there was a point at which I realized that because our home was only aware of the binary, my child hit a point where, well, that doesn't fit and that doesn't fit. And how can I don't know how to express myself so that you can see me as I see myself. So I feel invisible. And living through a period of life feeling completely invisible to your own parents, I think that's an experience that isn't restricted to people who are gender nonconforming. I think a lot of kids feel that way.
Yeah.
And the deeper I dive into the gendered work, the more I'm making connections to see that the challenges that are experienced over here are actually like the core principles are transferable to any number of challenges that kids face. And the challenges that a gender nonconforming person experiences in terms of these labels don't fit me. So how do I define myself? How do I become? The becoming piece is the same thing that we're all experiencing. And being able to help to create a world in which everyone, absolutely everyone, gets to say, there is no label apart from I am a human being that I will take on by default.
Or just
I get to discover myself beyond the I am. Everything else is possible.
Yeah. So empowering. So beautiful. So Daniela, if our listeners can relate to your story, I think there's something, you've got something special to help with them today. So can you tell us about that and where they can find it? I'll also post it in the show notes below, but why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I've created a tool for parents, particularly parents of gender nonconforming children who want to learn more of the language around having the conversation and how to have the conversation in a way that is empowering to their children and respectful and honoring of their children's lived experience. So I've created Bridging the Generation Gap, the ABC Guide to Successful Coming Out Conversations.
Okay.
And I'm making that available to any listener who would like to have it.
Thank you. If
interested, can send me an email.
Okay.
B-E at DanielaChase.com, and I would be happy to send that on to them.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for all of this, for sharing everything, for all of your journey, for the evolving and for becoming. I definitely want to have you back on and dive deeper into, I've made some really great notes around where I want to go. But thank you so much for sharing all of this. And I hope that if there are one or more moms out there, that they can connect and know that they're not alone and that we are all in this together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, hopefully that at some point along this journey, they can feel that connection and just feel inspired and know that there's a space to connect. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we will have you back.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. I am so grateful. I want to invite you to join our Facebook group, Redefining Motherhood More Than Moms. You can find the link in the show notes below. And if you want to find more information, more resources, and stories, you can subscribe to our weekly More Than Moms journal. I want you to remember that you are doing the best you can with the resources that you have. You are loved, you are worthy, and you are enough. You got this, Mama.